headlines. Rail passengers in Britain are facing disruption as thousands of train drivers union members hold a strike over a pay dispute. Russian forces take full control of Pskov, a town on the outskirts of Ukraine's Donetsk region. And China resorts to makeshift hospitals in order to tackle surging COVID cases across the nation. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Industrial strikes in the UK shows no signs of abating amid rising inflation. This time, train drivers in London have walked out of their jobs over pay and working conditions. Members of a British trade union representing train drivers have staged a 24-hour strike. The union has warned more strikes will be called if train companies and the government fail to resolve the problems. Large parts of Britain's train network have been brought to a standstill. British workers in the postal service, ports and telecom companies have already held similar strikes. Households are grappling with record-high inflation coupled with a cost-of-living crisis. Last week, the Bank of England warned inflation could hit 13% by fall. Such woes are mainly blamed on the economic fallout of the Russia-Ukraine war. Household energy bills in Italy are expected to double in the third quarter of 2022 as a consequence of the sanctions on Russia and rising gas prices. Italian families are holding their breath as fears about how they'll be able to cover their costs keep mounting. Max Civelli has more from Rome.
Gas bills in Italy will likely double in cost from October the 1st if gas prices continue to rise this way. The recent announcement by power regulator ARERA has gone utterly unnoticed, with the Italian media focusing on the electoral campaign about a month away from the September 25 national elections. A week ago, the outgoing Italian government unveiled a €17 billion aid package aimed at protecting families from surging energy costs and rising consumer prices. However, ARERA and some energy experts have warned that very little has been done so far to reduce energy consumption in the country.
Italy's highly critical energy situation has been downplayed by politicians and the media. On one side, there is confidence about the country achieving its target of reaching storage levels of 90%, while on the other side, the risk that Russia could altogether stop the flow of gas to Italy has been underplayed.
Gas is central to Italy's energy systems. The country even produces over 50% of its electricity from natural gas. Rome has cut its reliance on Russian gas imports to 25% from about 40% at the start of the year, a decision that has thrown the energy sector into uncertainty. Some analysts have predicted annual gas bills could reach an average of €1,800 next year, almost double the annual average of €950 recorded this year. Many Italians are simply bewildered about how they can find themselves in a position of not being able to heat or light their homes. The outgoing government is planning to offset its dependence on Russian gas by signing new deals with African and Eastern Mediterranean countries and building new regasification plants in a number of Italian sea towns, a move that has met with staunch opposition from local residents. Max Civili, Rome.
Fighting rages in Ukraine's Donbas region. Russian forces say that they have taken full control of the town of Pskov.
Armed forces of the Russian Federation continue a special military operation in Ukraine. As a result of Russian and pro-Russian forces' advance, Pskov in Donetsk People's Republic has been fully liberated. On an airfield near Domanivka in Mykolaiv region, two Mi-24 helicopters of Ukrainian air forces were destroyed. Russian air defense systems destroyed four Ukrainian drones in the last 24 hours in Kharkiv region.
The Russian Defense Ministry also says its forces have destroyed a U.S.-supplied HIMARS rocket system and an ammunition depot close to the city of Kramatorsk. Capturing Donbas has been the main goal of Moscow since February, when the conflict began in Ukraine. The eastern region is made up of Luhansk and Donetsk provinces, where the conflict has been focused. Luhansk is now almost completely under Russian control, but Ukrainian forces are still holding out in Donetsk. Onto France, firefighters there are struggling to contain wildfires that continue to tear through the hillsides in the east. Several rescue groups from other European countries are helping France battle the flames. Fresh wildfires have forced thousands of people to leave their homes in southwestern regions. Over 7,000 hectares of forests and lands have been burnt to the ground. Officials warn that there is still risk of new fires due to high temperatures and a worsening drought. France is struggling with successive heat waves and its worst drought on record. An end to the third heat wave on Sunday is expected to bring some relief to the current situation. Twitter suspends the account of Press TV host and producer Marzia Hashemi in yet another crackdown on the freedom of speech. A message by the platform reads that Hashemi's account was suspended due to breaking Twitter rules. According to the message, Hashemi has also been banned from creating any new accounts on the platform. Marzia Hashemi is the host and producer of Press TV's Hidden Files program. Her last tweet before suspension was about the long history of execution of human rights activists and opposition figures in Saudi Arabia. That was a topic discussed in depth during the latest episode of the Hidden Files program. Moving on to news from Yemen, the Ansarullah movement has held unprecedented military parades in the capital city of Sana'a and other regions. The parades showcase the movement's military capabilities, including tanks, armored vehicles, drones, rockets, and other heavy weaponry. Ansarullah officials say that this way they mean to remind the Saudi-led coalition that if it does not lift the blockade, Yemen will use its power to break the siege. The coalition has stopped attacks on Yemen following a UN-brokered ceasefire that came into force some 4 months ago, but it still maintains a blockade on the country. More than 7 years of the Saudi-led war have devastated Yemen and has led to what the UN has called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Yemeni activist and political analyst Yusuf Mowry says Yemen's Ansarullah movement is sending several messages to its enemies with these parades.
The first message that they are sending with this display of military parades that have taken place throughout this entire week is that the Sana'a government and the Ansarullah movement, they're fully ready to embrace the art of war and embrace their Yemeni military power in order to defend Yemen and in order to bring about the Yemeni people's demand by ending the 8-year blockade and ending the war on Yemen. That's the first message. The second message that the Ansarullah movement is sending with this military display is, you know, there's a saying here in Yemen, ما قدرت من الجمل إلا إذنه, which translates to, you've only seen the tip of the ear of the camel, or you've only seen the tip of the iceberg when it comes to the military power that the Yemeni army possesses. Everything that has been displayed, such as tanks, the armored vehicles, the drones, that's only the weapons that the Ansarullah movement wants the world to see. However, what remains unseen is the fact that they have a sophisticated, state-of-the-art ballistic missile capability that they are not showing to the world. And the only time you see them, you see this military power on display, is in the battlefield itself.
The United States continues to plunder Syria's national resources as it smuggles a fresh convoy of stolen oil into Iraq. According to Syrian media, the convoy contains 89 oil tankers. On Thursday, the U.S. also transferred 144 tankers loaded with stolen Syrian oil to Iraq. According to the Syrian Ministry of Oil and Mineral Resources, the U.S. and militant groups it supports pillaged over 80% of Syria's daily oil production in the first half of 2022. The U.S. maintains nearly 1,000 troops in Syria with the alleged goal of fighting terrorist groups. Syria has time and again condemned the U.S. presence on its soil and the looting of its oil. We've talked to our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, about the U.S. presence in Syria and the pillage of the Arab nation's oil. He says the oil revenues help the U.S. finance its military forces in Syria and to support terrorists.
It's using it in order to finance its presence over there in Syria and also giving some of them to Syria's democratic forces instead of just paying from its own pockets for its presence in Syria. So it's occupying Syria. It's using this money to finance its presence, to give the Syria's democratic forces some of that money, and also to support some various terrorist groups on the ground in Syria. We all know that there are confirmed reports about the U.S. training terrorists of Daesh and other groups in Al-Tanf, for example, on the border between Syria and Iraq, and other places also. So this is what the United States is doing, according to many reports, according to many analysts. It's using that money to finance its presence, to train terrorists, also sometimes to directly give those terrorist groups some ammunition and arms in order to keep fighting the Syrian army, keep dividing the country, keep the crisis ongoing and prolong it as much as possible, because it is not in the benefit of the United States to for security to return back to Syria, for the Syrian government to recontrol its territories and its oil resources, because this would mean that the United States has to go out, and this is definitely something that it doesn't want.
China is resorting to makeshift hospitals as COVID-19 cases are surging across the Asian nation. The southern province of Hainan has built two makeshift hospitals, and another one is under construction. The province is battling its biggest coronavirus outbreak since the pandemic began. Reported over 1,400 cases on Friday. Officials have placed tight restrictions and lockdowns in the province, which are expected to continue over the weekend. The number of China's total COVID infections for the same day stands at more than 2,100, but the country has reported no new deaths recently. The nation's fatalities stand at around 5,200. Tropical storms lash Japan's main island of Honshu as waves of heavy rains move toward the north. Miri storm is expected to dump nearly 300 millimeters of rain on parts of central Honshu. The Meteorological Agency has issued warnings of mudslides and flooding for Shizuoka, where over 70,000 people are told to evacuate. Warnings on high waves of rainfall and strong storms are also issued for Tokyo and other coastal areas nearby. The storm was formed early on Friday and canceled dozens of flights and caused delays to bullet train services. In an unprecedented move, the FBI searched former U.S. President Donald Trump's residence in Florida earlier this week. Now, a search warrant unsealed by a judge says top-secret files were seized from Trump's estate. Trump is accused of violating rules on official record, something he denies. The former president and his Republican allies have accused the FBI of being corrupt and politicized.
The U.S. Justice Department says FBI agents have found 11 sets of classified documents, with some marked as top secret, in Trump's Mar-a-Lago home in Florida while executing a search warrant this week. The warrant was publicly released following a federal judge's order. It states investigators had probable cause to believe Trump violated three federal crimes, including violating the Espionage Act, obstruction of justice, and criminal handling of the government records. Media reports say the FBI search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago home was for possible classified materials related to U.S. nuclear weapons. Trump, however, rejected that. He called it a hoax and claimed he had no stored classified information. The unprecedented raid on the residence of the former U.S. president provoked a backlash from leading Republicans who described the move as politically motivated. The Florida governor, Ron DeSantis, said the search of Trump's property was another escalation in the weaponization of federal agencies against the regime's political opponents. Also, Florida Senator Marco Rubio stated that Biden is using his power to persecute Trump. But the White House has denied the allegations, saying it was unaware of the search before it happened. Moreover, there have been growing threats in recent days against FBI agents and offices across the country. On Thursday, a man who tried to breach the FBI Cincinnati office was shot and killed by police after he fled the scene. Law enforcement officials say the man may have been present at the January 6th riot. Right after news of the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago broke, there was a big spike in tweets referencing civil war. Analysts and reporters say this is alarmingly similar to the activities in the lead-up to the January 6th attack on the Capitol.
Well, I think it's true that there are people in the permanent national security wing of the U.S. government who don't want Trump to return to office. And whether or not those people are currently raiding Trump in Mar-a-Lago in order to try to get proof of crimes they could use to charge him and put him in a position where he legally can't run for office.
The FBI search of Trump's estate has drawn fierce rhetoric from the former president and his allies. They have pledged to hold the Biden administration to account. That comes as reports say FBI agents were looking for classified documents related to nuclear weapons.
Shockwaves spread across America in response to the news that the FBI had searched the private Florida residence of Donald Trump. It prompted threats of retaliation from the former U.S. president and his allies. The surge in violent rhetoric drew concerns that it could lead to civil unrest and a social crisis. Department of Homeland Security officials have been warning for months that this type of warlike rhetoric, which came to fruition on January 6th and which continues to be fueled by reactions to ongoing investigations of Trump, is increasing the risk of more widespread political violence ahead of the midterm elections in November. This comes as recent polls have shown a rising acceptance of political violence among Americans. About 1 in 3 Americans say they believe violence against the government can at times be justified. According to another study by researchers at the University of California Davis Violence Prevention Research Program and the California Violence Research Center released last month, more than half of Americans expect that a civil war will erupt in the U.S. sometime in the next few years.
I think it is a sign that the U.S. Polarization has gotten way out of hand and could be leading to a constitutional crisis and possible civil war or social breakdown kind of situation. We have seen this polarization growing for many years.
Meanwhile, as much as 40% of election and poll workers in the largest jurisdictions in the U.S. have so far said they won't be returning to their jobs out of their own fears. Other states are seeing drop-offs too. Nearly 1 in 3 local election workers said they felt unsafe because of their jobs. The alarming partisan divide within the U.S. political system ahead of the vital midterm elections in November had raised concerns over the possibility of internal conflict.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
French President Emmanuel Macron recently said he wanted a review of his country's military policies on the African continent and had asked his ministers and army chiefs to work on it.
J'ai demandé au ministre et au chef.
I have asked the Defense Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, and the Joint Chief of Staff to rethink by next autumn the entirety of our military presence in Africa.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and it's always great welcoming you here at Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative analysis of events making headlines in Africa. Today we are focusing on efforts by France to reboot its diminishing neo-colonial influence in Africa. By pursuing such a policy, France is clearly ignoring the voices of most Africans who want to see an end to the negative influence of former colonial powers in the continent. The second part of our program will be on a new report showing that African governments owe 3 times more debt to Western private lenders than to China and are charged double the interest. So stay tuned till the end of our show today.
France rebooting neocolonialism in Africa. French President Emmanuel Macron said last month that he wanted a rethink of all his country's military postures on the African continent by the first half of 2023. The operational overhaul is said to have an impact notably on the country's involvement in the Sahel region. The remarks by Macron were followed by a visit to three African countries in what is seen as deliberate efforts by Paris to strengthen, revive, and rejuvenate its imperialism in Africa. Despite the efforts by Macron, France is still perceived negatively in Africa.
In May this year, demonstrators from the South African Economic Freedom Fighters Party marched to the French embassy in Pretoria and demanded that France should leave Africa. Party leader Julius Malema said French colonialism in Africa is the most brutal. Let's take a listen.
French colonialism in the African continent continues to be the most brutal, cruel, and devilish form of colonialism in the African continent. We, as a generation of freedom fighters, reject and condemn the fact that decades after the declaration of so-called independence of former colonized territories, colonizers continue to maintain a colonial and neo-colonial relationship with African countries which are supposed to be free from colonial control.
Well, for more on how France is reshaping its neo-colonial strategies in Africa, we have contacted Nestor Freeman, a coordinating committee member of the Black Alliance for Peace. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, President Emmanuel Macron of France wants a rethink of all of his country's military posters on the African continent, and he even asked his ministers and army chiefs to work on it. What's your take on this statement?
Mm-hmm. So it's a necessary reconsideration that they have to make because of the crisis of imperialism and the fact that neocolonialism is on its last leg in the continent of Africa, particularly in the African neocolonies. When we think about Mali in particular, and just all of the Burkina Faso, all of these different places where France's military footprint is not being seen favorably by the masses of the people, and naturally so, then they and imperialism, not just France, but all of them, have nothing else to offer, no other means of enforcing their hegemony, but through militarization and militarism, then they have to rethink what are they going to do. So they, you know, they've already been kicked out of Mali and have to withdraw their troops from there. And so right now they're in a waning position.
In recent years, protests against the presence of France in its former African colonies have been on the rise, particularly in West African countries such as Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Chad. Last year, French troops on their way to central Mali from Burkina Faso killed two such protesters in a Nigerian town. A Malian activist says they are opposed to French imperialism and control in the region.
Nous ne sommes pas contre la France, nous ne sommes pas contre les Français, mais oui, nous sommes contre la politique française au Mali, nous sommes contre la politique française au Sahel.
There have been protests against the French military in several West African countries, as you earlier mentioned. So why is France insisting on imposing itself on Africa while ignoring popular opinion in the continent?
All of the current, what we call neocolonial powers, have to ignore popular opinion. It is natural because popular opinion is tied to the natural inherent aspirations of self-determination. And self-determination is antithetical to neocolonialism and neocolonial interests. So neocolonialism exists to extract and the wealth and the resources to impose its markets and, you know, its economy, control the economies. And all of that is the exploitation of Africa, which is, you know, people don't want that. And so popular opinion is really an expression, no matter how, you know, essentially speaking, when we boil it down, is an expression of the desire to self-determination.
French President Emmanuel Macron's trip to West Africa last month was touted by Paris as his latest effort to reshape France's relations with its former colonies in Africa. But the visit's short-term fanfare is unlikely to hold deepening opposition to France or slow down its declining influence in the region. The continued plundering of Africa is critical for the survival of Western economies.
They're trying to find ways to address this irreversible economic crisis of imperialism. And then right now we're seeing in a world where these the tensions are high, particularly like with the NATO war against Russia, that it's making extremes in terms of even Europe is facing shortages of goods and the disruption of the trade routes and things like that, oil and all that. And so right now they have to look to, and then they also are concerned, also they're concerned about Russia's and China's relationship on the African continent. So right now their objectives have to be, and they know that they can't, that militarism is not faring well. So they have to figure out and search for other means to sustain their interests and their hegemony in this area.
Niger, the world's poorest country, according to the UN's Human Development Index, is increasingly becoming a center of Western military expansionism in Africa. Although Niger regained independence from France in 1960, the former colonial power still plunders the country's rich natural resources. Now, France's foreign and military ministers recently visited Niger, a key partner of Paris in the Sahel. What is the role of this uranium-rich country in France's renewed neocolonial push in Africa?
They participate in this military exercise, the African Lion, it's called. It's a very joint military exercise with all these different countries, Western countries and African countries, trying to, in their so-called interest to combat terrorism and extreme, these violent insurgents, as they refer to them, although they really should be seen as that themselves, because they don't really bring the stability to the continent of Africa. So Niger is still in a position to, at least the elite of it, because the masses of the people in none of these countries really want the presence of these former colonial powers and these current neocolonial powers. So they're seeing Niger as a partner and trying to beef up this, what their so-called war against terrorism, and then also trying to figure out how do they place themselves strategically in Africa, where their influence is waning. Influence waning all the way to the state level, and for example, in Mali, the state itself.
During his visit to Cameroon, French President Emmanuel Macron denounced what he claimed was hypocrisy expressed by African countries regarding Russia's military operation in Ukraine.
The choice that has been made by the Europeans, firstly, is in no way to participate in this war, but to recognize it and to name it. I have seen too much hypocrisy, particularly on the African continent, and I'm saying this very calmly, with some not calling it a war when it is one, and saying they don't know who started it because they are diplomatic pressures.
These remarks by Macron are not surprising, as they further reveal his neo-colonial and patronizing attitude towards the people of Africa.
And my last question. Now, will France succeed in re-establishing its waning influence in Africa, especially in view of competition from other powers such as Russia, China, and Turkey?
Even if they were to get some reestablished, to gain back some influence, we have to be mindful. I think one of the things that will be inform us is the insightful and seminal work of Kwame Nkrumah, that neocolonialism is the last stage of imperialism. There is no other stage, for imperialism to have in terms of maintaining itself. And so an imperialism is in a state of crisis. Imperialism meaning the dominance and the hegemony of these Western powers over the economies, political life, and even culture of the places. People are no longer going to stand for it. It's exposed to be the existential threat that it is to the masses of the people, at least on the continent of Africa, and it's getting so other places. And so it can't reestablish it. It can only maybe get a little bit of its control back, but that's only a temporary thing.
Well, there you have it. Neocolonialism is the last stage of imperialism, and the masses in Africa are resolute in reasserting their independence. Thanks a lot, Nefta Freeman, for your in-depth analysis. We now take a short break before our next topic, which is on how private Western lenders are increasing the debt burden in Africa.
African debt burden blamed on Western lenders. You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
According to a report released recently by a UK-based charity, Debt Justice, African governments owe three times more debt to Western private lenders than to China and are charged double the interest.
Citing calculations based on World Bank data, the report said that just 12% of African governments' external debt is owed to Chinese lenders, compared to 35% owed to Western private lenders.
Now, African experts say that the debt trap narrative propagated against China is part of a wider geopolitical rivalry between West and China.
The debt trap issue has always been a political, slander. A third of African debt is owed to asset managers, private banks, and all that. But interestingly, the West has loudmouthed. The monopoly of global media means they could shout from the rooftops and get everybody listening.
Now, to discuss how private Western lenders have chained Africa to a heavy debt burden, we have contacted Lawrence Freeman, a political economic analyst for Africa. Thanks for joining us today, sir.
Great to be with you.
Now, the report released by the UK-based charity Debt Justice in July confirmed that Western private lenders are hugely responsible for Africa's debt burden and not China. Now, this is seldom in the mainstream media, and all we hear is this so-called China debt trap. Now, is there a conspiracy of silence here?
What we've seen over the last several years is that there's been just simply propaganda, outright lying, saying that China now is the biggest debtor, that the African countries have China as the biggest lender, and therefore they also have put forth this theory that China is deliberately indebting African nations above the means at which they can pay the debt, and then they would, the Chinese, presumably, when the Africans defaulted, they would take over these projects or actually their physical resources. And of course, none of this is true. Debt trap diplomacy doesn't exist. It's a propaganda lie by the West to attack China.
Tim Jones, head of policy at Debt Justice, says the UK and the US should rein in on private Western lenders because most international private debt contracts are made under British or US law. He adds that Western governments have failed to take on companies in their own countries, who, unlike China, did not suspend debt repayments during the pandemic.
75% of the African economy is driven by the middle-income countries. Now, these are the countries that are having a challenge with the question of debt. So, unless you recognize that, without dealing with the pressure that countries like Egypt, Kenya, South Africa, Ghana are facing, that you'll not be doing much in terms of saying that you're helping the African economy.
Why are Western governments failing to compel private lenders to ease loan repayments from low-income countries to tackle a debt crisis?
You have to understand that for increasingly over the last half century, the United States and the West, but I know the United States the best, has moved away from any concern about actually developing and assisting and collaborating with African nations and other third world nations to develop their economies. They will not, as a matter of policy, they will not help countries actually economically develop. They're not interested in the kind of long-term, low-interest loans that African nations would need to build infrastructure. So they don't want low-interest loans. They don't want to make long-term investments. They allow the private sector to make quick buck overnight, big returns. And they could care less about what it takes to build up an economy and raise the standard of living of people.
China, unlike most Western countries, supports Africa in making infrastructure development a priority for economic revitalization. It encourages and supports Chinese enterprises to adapt various models to participate in the construction, investment, operation, and management of infrastructure projects in Africa. The Kenyan president elaborates here.
Partnership with China is not a partnership based on China telling us what we need. It is a partnership of friends working together to meet Kenya's social economic agenda.
At the end of 2020, Western private creditors held $247 billion in debt from African countries, compared to $83 billion for China, $274 billion for multilateral institutions, and $93 billion for other public creditors. Africa continues to receive colossal amounts of money from Western lenders, yet many countries in the continent are still wallowing in poverty.
Most of them go to quick, high-return investments. Over the years, most of these investments have been in the extractive industries of oil and gas, and they have obviously not gone into actual development. The United States and the West, for the bulk of the last several decades, has been investing in extraction, even though they attack China for this. And it's mainly oil and gas. And they look for investments where they don't have to actually make any long-term commitment. What Africa needs, what all developing nations need, all nations actually need, is they need to develop and expand their infrastructure. Infrastructure is the platform of which an economy grows and develops.
The G7 countries have acknowledged that there is need for debt restructuring at a meeting last June. Now, leaders said that they will urge all relevant creditors, including private creditors, to get more involved in debt restructuring. An official of the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa says many African countries are in need of debt relief.
ECA is calling for debt service suspension. So far, only 32 African countries benefited from debt suspension by the IMF of a total of $9.3 billion. And we are arguing for more debt suspension, service suspension, and we are also arguing for on-lending of SDR, special drawing rights, so that African countries can have more access to international resources.
Western powers claim to champion for the rights of African countries, yet interest rates charged by their financial institutions for African loans are well above those of Chinese lenders. Now, what's your take on this?
This so-called concern for rights of Africans and African nations is really a false democracy. In other words, they don't really thinking about how to develop a nation. How do you make a democratic nation? How does a nation become democratic? The people have to be involved in making the decisions for the future of their country. Well, they can't do that if they live in poverty. And the West's so-called concern for human rights and democracy and other issues like this are, again, propaganda. the right to live, the right to have food, the right to have housing, the right to have a job, what Roosevelt once called the four freedoms, this is what is required, and the West has no concern. So when the West talks about, the United States talks about the rights of African nations, it is pure hypocrisy.
Despite promising signs of a continuing global economic recovery in 2022, the African debt situation is of great concern to many people in this continent, which has immense untapped potential. Now, how can Africa get itself out of this vicious cycle of high interest loans by Western lenders?
I have been advocating for many, many years, and I put out articles constantly on my website, Lawrence Freeman, Africa and the World.com. I call myself a follower of Alexander Hamilton. I refer to myself as a physical economist. And what we need is Hamiltonian banks where the capital of the bank is lent out on a preferred low interest basis for those investments in infrastructure and industry that will help the nation grow. I have now been working with a group for a couple of years of Africans to establish a African Infrastructure Development Bank, which would be a bank that whose purpose would be to lend money for infrastructure. Now we have to get a capital base for the bank, and then we lend out a portion of that. Infrastructure is the most critical and central element for building up an economy, and an infrastructure bank would be the most important type of institution.
Well, Africa needs a special bank for infrastructure development to disentangle itself from the current debt burden. That's the opinion of our guest, Lawrence Freeman, and I would like to thank him for his incisive analysis today. And that brings us to the end of yet another edition of Africa Today. It was great having you. Thanks a lot, and goodbye for now.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين عليه السلام زيارة.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
لكم إلى يوم القيامة.
Brothers and sisters, we were discussing this excerpt of Ziyarat al-Ashura. يا أبا عبد الله إني سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم إلى يوم القيامة. O Abu Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you until the day of resurrection. As we concluded in the previous episode, we understood that two handles of faith are both love in the way of Allah and at the same time hate in the way of Allah. In this regard, Fudayl is reported to have asked Imam Sadiq alayhi salam whether love and hatred was from faith. And then Imam alayhi salam responded saying, وَهَلِ الْإِيمَانِ إِلَّا الْحُبُّ وَالْبُغْضِ. And is faith anything other than love and hatred? ثُمَّ تَلَى هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ, Fudayl says. And then Imam alayhi salam recited this verse, حَبَّبَ إِلَيْكُمُ الْإِيمَانِ وَزَيَّنَهُ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ. He made you love faith and beautified it in your hearts. وَكَرَّهَ إِلَيْكُمُ الْكُفْرَ وَالْفُسُوقَ وَالْعِسْيَانِ. And he made you abhor disbelief and open disobedience and sin. أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الرَّاشِدُونَ. Those are the guided ones. So, in expressing love or hatred, there must be no kind of personal or selfish relation involved. The criteria for loving or hating something must be truth and falsehood, both for loving and for hating. In fact, to be more accurate, the criteria is that which leads to perfection and that which separates us from our perfection.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is, do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we're talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Dear listeners, in this excerpt, يَا أَبَا عَبْدِ اللَّهِ إِنِّي سِلْمٌ لِمَنْ سَالَمَكُمْ وَحَرْبٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ. O Abu Abdullah, I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you. We are openly expressing our hatred, our detachment, and our separation from those traitors and their allies. And this is an open condemnation against injustice, and this is something natural. Because how can we detach ourselves from those traitors and the allies if we do not recognize them? So, prior to expressing our detachment and our hatred, we have to get to know them.
And that is why expressing our separation from those traitors and their allies is extremely effective and can really and definitely lead to victory. Of course, there are some other important things on this path, like sacrifice and steadfastness. But the first thing to know is to recognize where your enemy is. Brothers and sisters, if we look at the history, it reveals us that bara'a, an expressing condemnation and expressing detachment from the traitors and the enemies of Allah, is really able to topple some governments that are supported by most powerful existing forces. That is why we find that even the peaceful demonstrations, as we have recognized it, even those peaceful ones frighten the governments. The reason is that they are extremely effective in destroying the forces prevailing in the government. This is what Imam Hussein alayhi salam has taught us. He and his companions rose to practically reject the prevailing government of Yazid. And this was a manifestation of a bara'a from the side of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He rose and he expressed his hatred, his detachment and his separation from the prevailing government that only aimed at destroying Islam. Those forces aimed at humiliating Muslims, depriving them, all of them, of their rights and undermining the lives of the Muslims. That is why Imam Hussein alayhi salam rises to condemn this power. And this is the spirit of this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, inni silmun liman salamakum, وَحَرْبٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ إِلَىٰ يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. Thank you for staying with us. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
أنت الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكي كل عام لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين الروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.